I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. After another violent weekend in Baltimore, the 2015 murder count has risen to 191 victims, putting the city on an annual homicide pace we have not seen since the 1990s. 45 people were killed in July alone. According to The Sun, that matches the all-time monthly high from 1972, when the city population was more than 40% greater. Baltimore's interim police commissioner has called for more help from federal law enforcement agencies while reshuffling command assignments throughout the police department. Justin Fenton, crime reporter for The Sun, joins us this hour, along with city councilman Carl Stokes and senior news analyst C. Fraser Smith. Baltimore's surge of violence on Midday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Midday Show. Dan Rodericks here on WYPR, WYPF, WYPO, and streaming online through our website, WYPR.org. Thanks again for making Midday part of your day. I'm going to spend this hour talking about what's going on in Baltimore, another violent weekend in the city. The 2015 murder count now is up to 191. From May through July, 116 people were killed during that period, May through July. That marks a three-month high over the last 45 years. In other words, no time in the last 45 years since data like this was kept did we see 3 months in Baltimore City with 116 people killed. And as The Sun has noted, with July and May, homicide numbers reaching 40. At least 40. I think it's 42 in May, 45 in July. That matches, first of all, July matches the all-time monthly high. You have to go back to 1972 to find a month like that. And what's unique here is a year with 2 months in which at least 40 people were killed. That has not happened before, according to The Sun. One of the people doing a lot of the reporting on this, Justin Fenton, crime and criminal justice reporter at the Baltimore City, at the Baltimore Sun, joining me, my colleague from Calvert Street. Justin, how you doing?
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Another weekend, 10 people shot early Sunday morning, 7 in one incident. We've got the police commissioner now, the interim police commissioner, asking for help from more federal agents in the city. So just to update us a little bit here, I guess I should ask, is anything new overnight in terms of shootings in Baltimore?
The count is up one more. It's 192 now. There was a victim from the other day who passed away. So that continues the high rate of violence. Following a night that saw 10 people shot in about 2 hours, including 7 in one incident, police called a press conference saying they're going to start this new initiative that is going to involve 10 special agents from federal agencies, FBI, DEA, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the U.S. Secret Service to sort of embed with the homicide unit. The homicide unit has about, last time I heard the number, it was about 50 or 60 detectives, and now they're going to be working from the homicide unit's offices to try to solve some of these cases or get some intel. I'm not really clear on how that will be different beyond this setting, because we have heard that there's a lot of collaboration already. They've talked about this war room that was created, and certainly there's federal agencies working on various task force all around the city investigating cases and murders already. So we're trying to get more information about that today, and there's going to be a press conference with the mayor and Senator Mikulski where we might learn more this afternoon.
Pointed out in the Sun story yesterday, Justin, Colin Campbell's story, the department's homicide clearance rate is 36%. Clearance meaning what?
The clearance rate is calculated by taking all of this year's cases, and this is a federal thing. This is not a Baltimore police equation. This is the way the federal government wants the agencies to calculate the clearance rate. But it's all cases that are closed this year, whether it happened this year or happened in previous years, and then any cases where they were closed by exception. So, for example, if the suspect is dead and cannot be charged, they can close that by exception. So the clearance rate represents all cases from any year closed this year, divided by this year's number of cases. And so it's typically hovered. It used to be back in the 80s and early 90s, it was in the 70s and 80% range. Over time, it's dwindled down to where it was hovering around 45-55%, which actually is not out of step with the national average for cities of our size. But nevertheless, it's low and it's getting lower. And I think police acknowledge that the high rate that these cases are coming in, there's 18 people killed in a span of 7 days last month. They're saying that they are having a hard time keeping up.
Justin Fenton from the Sun. Frazier Smith, a WYPR senior news analyst, is with me in the studio, too. Frazier, how you doing?
Well, Dan, Justin, I'm back from a week away, and it's breathtaking, really, to see that we're pretty much where we were when I left here. I'm just wondering what the additional help will do, the additional...
The federal agents?
Yes. I mean, what are they going to do? They're not from Baltimore. What insights, what sources do they have? Well, or are they just bringing in new ideas about what to do?
Justin?
I mean, that's an excellent question, because I think the challenge in solving cases is getting people to talk, getting people to trust you, getting people to feel comfortable coming forward. I'm not sure that more people, more resources can necessarily change that. However, I think that it can't possibly hurt to have more people working on it and people who are skilled and have a good track record of these kinds of things. But yeah, the city's homicide rate and the clearance rate has been a major challenge for a long time now, and the issue is people willing to stand up and say that's the person who did it and follow up and testify in court.
A person associated with the 300 Men March, the organization that Munir Bahar founded that was out on bicycles over the weekend, said to me this morning during an interview that thugs, he used the term thugs, he says thugs listen to the news, they watch the news, they know what's going on in the city. Does the news that federal agents are coming to help the police, more federal agents are coming in, have any effect on those who might be thinking of carrying out, say, a revenge killing, a concern being that you could face federal penalty, not just state penalty for use of a handgun, say?
I think, first off, and I hate to sound flip, but there weren't any shootings since the announcement. There haven't been any overnight or this morning, so that's a good thing. I think probably the answer there is that people have to believe that that's true. If they believe that that's going to happen, if they see proof, if they see their friends or people they know getting locked up and convicted. But we've had federal prosecutions. We've had various programs, and ceasefire has been in effect now, which was supposed to call in and round up all the worst of the worst in the western and eastern districts and sort of threaten them with this possibility of federal jail time. And the western district, as everyone knows, is sort of, off the hook right now. So I guess we'll have to see.
Justin Fenton from The Sun. Thanks for joining us, Justin.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Justin Fenton, criminal justice and crime reporter for The Sun. 410-662-8780. Dan Roderick's here with C. Frazier Smith, WYPR senior news analyst and Daily Record columnist, and Carl Stokes from the 12th District of Baltimore City Councilman. Carl Stokes, nice to have you on the show.
Good afternoon, Dan. How are you today?
Well, I'd like to say good, but this is very depressing, this beat, ongoing beat of
right.
homicides. You scratch your head, you wince, you get depressed thinking about it. I don't know, Frazier, you join me in that. I think a lot of people feel this way. It was very frustrating to keep reading this and wondering what's it all about? Why now? What's going on?
I don't know if it is why now and so much, Dan. Frankly,
well, we haven't seen numbers like this since the 90s.
We haven't, but the homicide rate. The rate in Baltimore
has
always been 3 to 5 in the country. We've always been in the top 3, top
yes.
5 in the country.
We have less population than we did.
Now we have 275,000 less than the last time we had such a number.
Correct.
But the homicide rate is much greater than it was in 72 because we have, again,
a less population,
almost a quarter less population. This is a horrendous thing. I think, though, I and others called last week for federal intervention. I think it's an emergency. It's a crisis. They should be here. I don't think there are enough, and I thought they should be in charge. Now, of course, there's a debate about that, whether they should be in charge. But I think, I know I'm going back before my birth even, that when folk had to go into Chicago for gangland or go into New York for the mafia, this wasn't the local police who did this. This was the federal, the G-man. This was at the FBI. These were the ATF. These were the guys who had a longer arm, who had the federal penitentiaries, who had federal laws, who had more skill, more expertise. It's not that the local police officers don't do a good job, but they don't have the skill set in this particular situation.
The premise there was that it was organized crime they were going after, racketeering.
It is organized crime in Baltimore.
Well,
These are not little guys. Yeah. This is not petty larceny.
You can make that argument.
This is not car theft. This is The Wire revisited. It is for real. These are big-time cartels. People don't sort of want to think of that, saying Baltimore. How bad could they be? They're really, 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 really bad. They kill at will. It's no question. There are two groups of people doing most of the killing in Baltimore. Those that are ordered by the cartel, organized crime leaders, and those guys on the street level who are sticking up. We call them stick-up boys, the stick-up boys who are taking money from the local drug dealers, not the drug leaders, but the drug dealers, the small guys who, go from one hiding place to the other hiding place to take the drugs. Someone is given the drugs, then they go to this other guy to actually pay the guy.
So you think that accounts for most of the shootings we're seeing as some sort of organized homicide?
Yes. And again, there are two groups mostly who are doing the homicides.
Not just someone dismissing someone else, disrespecting somebody else. And you may have some of that. You think most of it is of an organized nature?
Yeah. This is not people stepping on somebody's shoes and somebody saying, oh, you stepped on my shoes, I'm going to shoot you. There is a little bit of that. But mostly it is the organized crime. It is a retaliatory crime. It is, you shot my runner, I'm going to shoot your runner.
How does it relate, in your mind, do you think, to what happened in April and early May here in Baltimore?
Well, I think the criminals are taking advantage, frankly, of, I hesitate to say this, but the police backing off, frankly, throughout the city of Baltimore. Individual officers have said that to neighbors, to community members. The FOP itself said it in couch sort of language, that police officers are afraid to do their job, which of course is the greatest amount of disrespect for the people in the community. No police officer has ever been taken to jail for doing their job. Very few officers have gone to jail for not doing their job. And so it is absolutely disingenuous to say that officers are afraid to do their job because they may go to jail for doing their job. That's not so. And the community expects them to do their job and do their job very well. And the community takes these hits as if they're hiding criminals. They're not. People tell me and tell police officers all the time who did what when. They want people to be taken off the streets. They want people to be taken off the streets for a long ass time. Excuse me, for a long time. They want people off the street. Good Carl, Catholic boy like me using those words.
That's fine, Carl. Thank you very much. Carl Stokes from the City Council will be here for the whole hour, and Fraser Smith joining me in the studio. Let's take a call before we go to our first break from Fells Point. Katie's the caller. Thank you for jumping right in. Katie, hello.
I'm going to try to state my opinion or perception, and I want to take the whole, police shooting people off the street and go, first of all, these murders, I am assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm right, that this is black crime on black crime. Am I wrong?
I think you're wrong. I don't think it's black crime on black crime. I think it's criminals killing citizens and some of their own. I don't think it's any more black on black crime. I wouldn't use the term for the shootings in the schools or the people killing their family or theaters. I wouldn't use the term.
We're not talking about that. I'm talking about the crime in Baltimore that's going on in the neighborhood.
You're saying if the victims are black.
Let me finish talking. If it was going on in Fells Point and my neighbors were shooting my other neighbors, I can hear to tell you that people would freak out and they would tell the cops and they would call the cops and they would have the cops and the cops would be coming down. At what point does the community not freak out? And you're saying you're one voice. And I appreciate it, but why isn't the mayor, why isn't every person connected with, why aren't they coming out and go, stop killing each other and stop and turn the people in. If the people and shun them. They're animals. They don't care about human life, but they're not shunned. They are not shunned in their neighborhood.
Okay, well, you're assuming you seem to have a lot of insight, Katie. I mean, do you have personal experience with that? Do you know that people aren't outraged? How do you know? I just going to ask you. Hold on, I want to ask you. How do you know people aren't freaked out? How'd you like to live in a neighborhood where a shooting occurred a couple of days ago and maybe another one the week before?
I lived on Holland Street, and people got shot in front of my house all the time. And I worked with the Violent Crimes Task Force. I had them staking out drug dealers in my house. I worked with the FBI. My sister and I made ourselves crazy.
Okay,
and
but
then,
how do you know people aren't freaked out, though? That's why it's an assumption you're
because
making.
Because it's not an assumption. It's like if people in their neighborhoods were working with the cops, but there's been this ongoing thing, and there's going to have to be some kind of turnaround, and there's going to have to be a little bit opening up and let the cops in because the cops are afraid. And they're, the whole thing now that people are running out and with their video cameras and they're just trying to do a little bit of their job and they're being ganged up on stuff. Why? These people are putting their lies there. You can't assume that they're bad. You have to let them do their job.
Okay. Anybody else want to respond to this? Frazier, what do you want to say to what you just heard from Katie and Fell's Point?
Well, you know, there's been controversy about things like zero tolerance and having led to the incarceration rate that we've seen, which is really deplorable. But it's not the same as saying that people in these communities don't want that kind of enforcement. They do, and this is your point, Carl.
Yes.
People want help. But then you get the impact of the low closure rate. I think that just makes the situation look more and more out of control.
The low homicide clearance rate at
36%
now.
Yeah, I appreciate Katie's words, but I got to tell you, folk in my community, and my community is black and white, it's poor, it's a middle income and a little bit above middle income, they do tell the police. They ask me, can I get the police to come in their second bedroom window? Can I get the police to come and look in their back alleys? Can I get the police to stay with them? They're happy to do that. They don't want uniform guys and gals in, but they will take officers in plain clothes who look like they're the insurance man or the meter reader. They really will. And so I got to tell you, they don't want these criminals in their neighborhoods. Do they shun them? The best they can without getting themselves killed, without getting their kids killed. I mean, they don't have guns. These are not members of the NRA. No slam of the NRA, but we're talking average citizen. So you tell me how the average citizen is supposed to stand up to murderers, people
that's
with
a, that's
high
a,
caliber
sort
guns.
Of what I wonder. Katie's assuming that people aren't freaked out by this stuff happening in the neighborhood. What do you do about it? I guess, you know, some people look at this and say, why do we see massive protests in the streets over citizens being killed by police officers in custody or whatever, and we don't see big marches, Black Lives Matter, right, when it comes to this kind of stuff, the daily homicides we're seeing in Baltimore? I mean, it's a question that comes, frequently comes up.
As Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says, should we not hold police to higher standards than gang members? Yeah, he was talking about people saying, why don't we run around and complain about the killing in the neighborhoods and leave the police alone? Well, because the police aren't supposed to act like gangs, but that's a whole other conversation, I think, for another show.
She was taking us there, though. She wonders why people are taking cameras into the street.
Because we read the Sun papers and others, and we know that some small percentage of police officers have been brutalizing citizens of Baltimore for years, not for the last couple of months, for years, and that caused the explosion.
Frazier.
Here, Carl, I have a question for you. I think the passion that you're showing here is something we haven't seen from everybody, and I think we need more of it. At the same time, you need reason thinking.
Sure.
So we have a war room, we've got the Webster Commission, and you are telling us that you know what's going on here. I don't get the same sense from from the war room or from Webster. I mean,
or the mayor's office. Well, Webster hasn't even had a chance to do the job yet. That's the Baltimore Homicide Review Commission that, according to the Sun story yesterday, the state's attorney in Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby, has almost single-handedly derailed. We're going to talk about that when we get back, okay?
Okay.
Because this is a question about leadership from City Hall. 410-662-8780. This is the Midday Show. We'll take your call if you have one. Comment about the violence in Baltimore. We'll be right back. Just a few minutes ago, Justin Fenton from The Sun was on the phone with us here and mentioned the ceasefire program in Baltimore. It's a heralded, I should say, the heralded ceasefire program, which takes aim at violent offenders. You know, it's targeted. It targets people in the community who are on parole, probation, have already committed a violent offense, and warns them about what will happen if they continue to, you know, be engaged in criminal activity or be in possession of a handgun. The city spent something like $400,000 to get David Kennedy from John Jay College in place here to get ceasefire rolling again, because there was one attempt at it in the 1990s. It's worked in other cities. That thing is just sitting idle from all I can tell. I don't think anything's happening with the ceasefire program in Baltimore. I think they're trying to get it up and running again after its first director resigned or
new director. Yeah, he resigned. Yeah. He said he wasn't getting enough support.
Okay. The other thing we have going on here is the Baltimore Homicide Review Commission, headed by Daniel Webster, who's one of the leading researchers in the United States when it comes to violent crime, both in terms of gun policy, gun laws, and in police strategy. Daniel Webster is the head of this thing, and it was announced last year. But according to The Sun yesterday, the state's attorney of Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby, derailed this initiative to bring together city leaders, it's supposed to be city leaders, law enforcement, criminal justice people, academics, public health people, all reviewing homicide cases to try to figure out, is there a pattern? Is there, what's in common with these cases? Can we help the police somehow by giving them good information about trends that we see in homicides in the city? But this latest crime-fighting program apparently is faltering, too, because the state's attorney doesn't want to participate. She says it will jeopardize cases if information about current cases is shared. She's glad to share information about cases that are closed from 2.5 or 3 years ago. Daniel Webster over at Johns Hopkins says that'll do no good. He said that Mosby's position, quote, really defeated the purpose and it completely took the air out of the whole process. And I notified the police commissioner and mayor's office and health commissioner that it just wasn't going to work. It was incredibly frustrating. So, by the way, this is modeled after a homicide review commission in Milwaukee that's been in place for 10 years. So, Carl Stokes, you're here from the city council. So,
right.
You got to be concerned about money spent on ceasefire.
Sure.
And $200,000 spent to get this thing up and running, this Homicide Review Commission.
Yeah.
And everything seems to be sidelined, stalled,
unfortunately,
broken.
Unfortunately, it's too much of the city seems to be siloed. I mean, too many of the agencies, too many of even individual persons, whether it's the mayor, city council persons, police, we just all seem to be siloed instead of working together with one purpose, you know. We ought to have a peace room, not a war room. We've already declared war on poverty. Poverty won. We had a war on drugs. Drugs won. Let's have a peace room. Let's bring peace to the street. Let's see if we can do that. But let me go back to what you asked me.
Seriously, things specifically
seriously
here.
We ceasefire. It did work. David Kennedy did it. Boston, of course, was where it all started, and then it advanced
in several other cities,
other places. You're absolutely right. We never did it correctly. We never did it fully engaged. We never jumped with both feet into it and allowed it to become what it could become. It still is not doing that. And the last director left and said that he wasn't getting full support. We try to piecemeal too many things, I think, in Baltimore. You're talking about this Webster and the state's attorney says, the Homicide Review Commission. Let's use three-year-old stuff when it's supposed to be current trends. I don't know enough about it other than what I read yesterday in the same article. again, even with the federal agents coming to Baltimore, I think it's piecemeal. I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough. And I think we're going to be, quote, partnering with, and they're going to partner with us instead of using their expertise to lead us. We should do larcenies. We should do burglaries. We should do what we can do well. We don't do organized crime. That's not what
Well, those things have possibilities. Ceasefire, Safe Streets
yes,
is another
do.
Thing. Another program.
And I support them, but doing whole hog, yeah. not piecemealing.
Well, it doesn't look like anything's happening right now. One of the Safe Streets operations has been sidelined. But, Frazier, I mean, what did you make of this story about Mosby pulling the – basically, I don't know if she's pulling the plug there. I'm not sure this Homicide Review Commission can't go on without her, but you need information from the police.
Well, my question after reading that story is what can't – Webster do without the current information? To a certain extent, it's obvious. I mean, if things have changed, if it's a new dynamic, then you need the new cases to figure
out if there's
right.
a trend or anything
yes.
in common among killings.
Now, I mean, why is it that we're hearing quite specifically and, again, passionately from the councilman what's really going on here, but not from anyone else, not from the mayor's office, not from the commission?
The mayor's response to this story about Mosby pulling out of this was pretty weak, I think.
Well, I mean, is it true
Did you read the response in here? Saying,
yes,
well,
I did.
You know, we don't want to jeopardize any cases. We don't want any of our, stakeholders in this to feel like their cases are being compromised or something. Where's the mayor saying, wait a minute, we need to have a homicide review commission here. I started it last year. It's a good idea. It worked in Milwaukee. Let's do it here. And if Ms. Mosby doesn't want to, I don't have any control over Ms. Mosby. If she doesn't want to take part in it, at least the police department will cooperate.
Right. She should just jump in and say, whatever Ms. Mosby wants to do or doesn't want to do, she didn't say she didn't totally want to be a part of it, but she said she didn't want to look at the newer cases or the cases that are still being adjudicated. Having said that, the mayor needs to take a strong hand and says, does anybody realize we're losing more than one citizen a day to murder, to homicide? And most of them are gangland killings, but there are Mackenzie Elliott, the 3-year-old. There
Unsolved,
are 10, 12, 15 people under 16 who have been killed. There are innocent victims out there because these guys don't always walk up to someone and shoot them in the head. They spray bullets. They shoot 10 people hoping they kill the one person they're trying to get.
Let's listen to our callers, our listeners, and have them join in this conversation again. John in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Welcome to Midday, John.
Yes. I'm calling the lady called before. I agree with her 100%. The problem with the city is nobody wants to listen to the victims. Nobody wants to listen to the people who live in certain neighborhoods that they need help. The city council people, and I'm glad you have one of them there, and I have talked to him, and he doesn't do anything. And the mayor's office doesn't do anything. Nobody does anything. You ask for help, and do you go to the meetings? I need to take another day off to go to a meeting? I don't have to go to a meeting.
What would you want to see happen?
Yeah, what do you want, John?
We need help. The people in Baltimore City need help. So obviously this group, this current city council team, and the mayor has no idea, no clue what's going on.
I know exactly what's going on, John. So tell me what you want to do to happen.
You don't return their calls. You don't do anything.
You didn't answer the question.
Right. No, I don't need to answer any questions.
You have to
answer the questions.
I think he'd answer your question if you were specific, John, about what you're talking about. You're talking about crime in your neighborhood?
Of course. Drugs, prostitution.
Okay. And are you in Carl Stokes' district? Have you called him?
Yeah, I have called him.
Okay.
Okay.
What do you do when people call you about crime in their neighborhood on the corner?
I call the police. I call others, and I try to talk with them about it. I meet them out in the community, not individually all the time, but in community meetings. And I let them know when we're going to have another meeting. I'll be out there with them. As he said, he doesn't feel like he needs to go to a meeting. And I'm not fighting with them at all about this. So the meetings are usually in the evening. Having said that, I sympathize with him. I'm not angry with him because he called me out. That's certainly no problem. But I just need to know what is going on so we can follow up. We don't always get it the first time.
Here's an email regarding the story that we were discussing moments ago about Marilyn Mosby withdrawing her office's participation in this fledgling Baltimore Homicide Review Commission. Claire pointing out that this was modeled after a program in Milwaukee that demonstrated to work. We noted that. Her reason for not working with the commission was stated as not wanting to compromise witness safety, yet other professionals on this commission and experts in other cities state that there are no procedures to ensure that witnesses are not compromised. There are procedures to ensure that witnesses are not compromised. I think that was pointed out in the story in Milwaukee. What is going on here? Is it interagency politics? Is it a clash of egos? In my view, it is a deplorable development. Matt is calling all the way from San Jose, Costa Rica. Must be listening to us online, unless our signal has improved. Hello, Matt.
yeah, I'm calling in via Skype, so if it sounds crappy, you'll know why.
Actually, it sounds pretty good, Matt.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, my parents live in Baltimore. I live out in Baltimore County, so I got to Baltimore often. I've been following this. And I have to say that I'm outraged by the police department, and not only the Baltimore Police Department, but police departments all around the country, because what I see is police have been acting as if they have no accountability to the citizens that they're supposed to serve. There's a clear pattern of abuse all across the country. And in the few cases where a city attorney has had the courage to actually try to prosecute these guys for the violations that they're doing, we have revenge of the police. We have an entire community, and this is my opinion. I don't know what the political reasons are, but city leaders, I think, have difficulty saying this. But Baltimore and other cities are being extorted by police unions who've decided that any time we get criticized, we're going to pull back and let these communities that are suffering under so much crime and poverty, we're going to let them fend for themselves. And it's clear that they're doing that. They're saying stuff like we're scared to do our job, which we all know is not true. We all know that being a police officer is dangerous work, but that's what you're paid to do, and you're also paid not to beat people up and have people die in your custody without there being accountability. So I'm pretty upset. I'd like to know what the city can do to rein in a police department who's decided that they're not going to do their job. Is there any way to fire these guys? Is there some program that can be done to get rid of the bad apples and put in people that are really serious about protecting the citizens of the city?
Yeah, but in regard to what the point that Matt's making about police just not doing their jobs as well as they should, or right, standing back, holding back, right, because in some sort of protest of the six of their comrades being charged with crimes in the death of Freddie Gray, how many bad apples are you talking about? You're talking about half of a district full of officers who aren't doing their jobs. I'm not saying this is the
right
case,
no,
but someone
right
looking at this from the outside, from San Jose, Costa Rica, would say something's going on there. You had six officers charged. You had a statement from the president of the FOP saying that officers were afraid to do their jobs, more afraid to do their jobs than they were being shot on duty.
Right.
And since then, we've had this surge in violence that we haven't seen since the 1970s. Now, can I ask one other thing about this? It assumes that police officers can somehow intervene to prevent homicides and shootings.
Right.
Right? Do we assume when homicides and shootings go down that police officers are on the job, they're vigilant, they're not allowing the circumstances to develop for shootings? What would you say about that? Because some people don't believe that cops can stop murders.
I'm not sure that every individual cop, man and woman on the street, can intervene. But I command ought to have a strategy and ought to have intel so that they can intervene. I certainly believe that. I also believe that people are willing to tell the officers. He touched on something. I sometimes hesitate to say these things, but here's what my people tell me, my people being the community folk. They said, Carl, we know that 95% of the cops are good. We know there's a really bad set of five cops. But here's our problem, Carl. The good cops aren't telling on the bad cops, so maybe they're all bad. I hate to say that out loud, but people are saying if the good cops will not take the bad cops out of their midst, who do we trust? That's what they ask.
Well, and this is another reason why you may find less cooperation with the police than you would like to have. If that's the way people feel about, if they think that there's nobody they can go to, then that's kind of a situation you get.
I don't know, what does the new commissioner do about this? He's got a tough job, the interim commissioner, Kevin Davis. How does he rally the troops?
I think he's a good guy. I think the troops are going to rally around him. I think they are. But I think he also has to say to his troops, you took an oath, guys. You took an oath. And the people out there in those communities, the retired people, the young people, they deserve us to do our best job every day. Every day, no matter how tough it is, we took an oath. We can't stand down. We cannot not engage.
Our number is 410-662-8780. A short break, quick break here on Midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. We'll go right back to the phone lines, take some more calls. Carl Stokes, city councilman, our guest in this hour, along with C. Fraser Smith, WIPR senior news analyst. Chris in Highlandtown. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Dan. First, I want to say I really enjoy listening to your show and the amount of care that you have for our city.
Oh, thanks.
I share in that care, and I'm just wondering why the elephant in the room is not being talked about, and that elephant being the parallels between our drug problem and prohibition in the 20s. It's the same exact situation. There's violence growing up around this unregulated black market that's allowing for these illegal businesses to form and protect themselves through violence. Why is it so hard for us as a country and as a city to discuss the legalization and regulation of what are now illegal substances in a way that will benefit our city and take those right off the table, take the violence out of it right away?
Well, you know where I am on that, Chris.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I'm a big Amsterdam guy. Before I saw it on the wire, I said let's designate two areas of the city to buy, sell, service. Make sure we bring services there. But he's right.
There's too much collateral damage.
Absolutely.
To the prohibition on heroin and cocaine and marijuana. There's just
absolutely
too much. Is getting the rest of the country to go along with that because these are federal crimes, right?
Yes, they are.
I mean, you could do something at the city or state level, but you're still dealing with the federals there. It's what's filled up our prisons.
Well, we need someone at the federal level to allow us to pilot, for lack of a better word. I mean, they're allowing it to happen in Colorado and Washington, not heroin and cocaine, but certainly it's still a federal crime to be doing marijuana in these states.
So what we have now is the really bad guys.
Right.
They're the ones that are regulating the trade.
They are.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, the BGF in this town and other groups.
And the two other groups, yeah.
Chris, I'm all for it. We can have that discussion again. We've talked about that a number of times here on the radio. We don't seem to get anywhere. But, you know, homicides, this is collateral damage from the war on drugs in the main. Drugs account for what, 70% or more of crime felonies that are committed?
Yeah, crime. Certainly
some
the violence.
Way related to drugs?
Yeah, well, the burglaries, the car, break-ins, all of that's related to guys trying to get $10, $15, $40 to pay for their daily habit.
Well, they would still need to do that, right? I mean,
yeah.
If you're going to sell, if you're going to have legal sales,
I mean,
maybe you wouldn't have to charge as much. But heroin's fairly cheap now.
I was going to say.
It's the violence that goes with it.
Yeah, it is.
But tell me if you have heard anybody, a police official or the mayor, a political leader, say what you said earlier in this program, Councilman. I mean, if this is the big deal, drug guys enforcing their superiority on the streets over the small dealers or the small
users. It's organized crime.
Why doesn't somebody say that?
Well,
I mean, that would be the provocation for getting the really big guns into Baltimore to deal with it.
The feds have done a bunch of BGF cases in the city. I don't know if they're under the racketeering law or how it's done, but it's not like the feds haven't done anything here. Been very active U.S. Attorney's Office in Baltimore.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
But even, you say even more so.
Yes.
Yeah, we
got to
go whole hog.
Yeah.
The previous commissioner said 2 years ago that the crime in Baltimore is because of the BGF. Then we arrest 18 BGF members, and we have worse crime.
Let's go to Jennifer in Timonium and take her call. You're on Midday, Jen. Hi.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Pretty good, actually. But, you know, this stuff really bothers me. It really bothers me.
Yeah, and that's why I'm calling, because I don't like feeling helpless. I work in Timodium. I live in Harford County, so I'm removed from the city, but it's still my city. How can, my question really is for Carl, how can someone like me, young white woman living in the county, how can I help? Is there something small, large, that, you know, that we can do?
Yeah, in small ways. Thanks, Jen, for calling. You know, the number one problem, I believe, in Baltimore is poverty. 25% of the citizenry is in poverty. That means they earn about $12,000, $15,000 a year trying to take care of an entire family. Poverty.
Well, that's individual.
Individual.
For a family, it's
like $25,000 per family.
Family, right.
Still, yeah. That's very little money to try to get through with three people, four people.
It's ridiculous. It's what the federal government calls poverty.
Holy moly. We call it worse than poverty, right? Pretty much as homelessness.
It's extreme poverty.
But so... as they said, as one of our popes said, you know, if you want peace, work for justice. And so if you can come in and help with kids' education, I'm not going to tell you big things to do, frankly, because I don't know how that can be managed by individuals. But certainly there are enough places that need volunteers to support people in the city that you could do.
I could suggest some off the air, Jennifer. If you get in touch, why don't you get in touch with me? Drop me a line at Baltimore Sun or WYPR, just drodricks@wypr.org, and I have some suggestions for you.
That sounds great. Thank you. I just wanted, you get so overwhelmed. There's so many areas of problems. Where do you concentrate an effort if you're someone like me?
Thanks
and
for
like
your
Carl
call.
Says, poverty would be perfect. So
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, it's really nice to hear someone say they care and refer to Baltimore as our city because, you know, you don't have to care about this if you live someplace else, right? And a lot of people
have left for that reason. Some people that I know who are from these hard neighborhoods have left and act as if they no longer care.
I have a thought about the involvement of the state's attorney in all this. You know, she was criticized for the charges and the way that she made them against the six policemen. And some people thought that it could compromise the cases down the road, and perhaps it will. Mm-hmm. But now we have a situation where she declines to participate in the people who are trying to deal with another level of unrest. A murderous one in which these crime numbers keep going up.
Yeah.
But this time she's playing it closer to the vest. It's really,
Her predecessor was supportive of this, Greg Bernstein. He sent two assistant state's attorneys to Milwaukee to check it out, and he supported it. So he must have had the same concerns about, confidentiality of these cases, ongoing open cases, but must have found a way to get around that.
It sounds as if the commission chairman wants to look for a workaround. He's depressed, obviously.
Yeah,
but
Daniel Webster. Yeah.
What do you suppose it is he wants to do? Does anybody have an idea?
I don't know. I just
honestly, I don't know. It seems to me you could go forward with this if the police department cooperated, and maybe they feel like they can't cooperate if the state's attorney doesn't. But I think the mayor could say to the police commissioner, "We have a homicide review commission. I want your violent crimes unit to share information in a real time way with this commission, so we can track trends and help the department." I think
the police would do the investigation in most cases and turn their information over to the state's attorney. So I'm assuming, don't know this, that they have pretty much the same information that the state's attorney has.
Derek's been holding. He's calling from Pasadena. Go right ahead, Derek. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, you're great. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll make these comments quick because I know you're kind of running down on time. Let me just say to Karen and the guy that agree with her, if you've never been around organized crime, you have no idea how deadly these guys are. They will kill children and sleep well that night. And it's one thing to be in a different kind of city, but in Baltimore City, when you call the police, and it's like your neighbor that's committed the crime, you know what police officers will do? Mm-hmm. They'll come to you. They won't even go investigate next door or down the street. So now the murderer knows who ratted on them. And if you're just an adult by yourself, you might take that risk. But they will and do target children. That's one thing. Two, I haven't heard anybody say this on any talk shows I've listened to, like Diane Rehm, but for me, I think that the security apparatus in this country is like, I guess you would almost say like it has an autoimmune disorder, like it's constantly attacking the body. It seems to me, and maybe Carl Stokes can speak to this, I'm starting to get confused about what my constitutional rights are when dealing with somebody with a badge, gun, and uniform, because it seems like each time somebody asserts their constitutional right to search and seizure, or we expect that there to be punishment that fits the crime, or I am able to plead the fifth, that only seems in a police officer's mind as escalation. And one more point quickly, I actually heard on, I think it was the Diane Rehm show, or it might have been on the morning show, I can't remember her name, on NPR, and this woman, she's a police trainer now, she said she was taught when she was coming up that the Constitution was a workaround document. I mean, she said that on, like, national radio. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Leonard Hamm on the show Friday mentioned how you go to the academy, you go through your training, and then a young officer gets out in a district someplace, and a veteran will tell him, everything you learn in the academy, forget all that. This is how we do it out here. And he said that's the culture that has to be broken and has to stop.
It has to be broken, yeah, right.
Here's a comment from the Hollins Market neighborhood sent to us by one of our listeners by email. A quick note on things happening in the Hollins Market neighborhood. For one, we watch drug dealers and those involved in the trade come by a murder scene immediately after and talk about it openly, but no one catches them. When we call the police in our neighborhood, they are slow to respond versus when friends in other neighborhoods call for the same thing. For example, a person falling into the street who is high on heroin, the difference in response times is staggering from neighborhood to neighborhood. We have two clinics which brought an influx of 500-plus patients for Suboxone, which is regularly sold outside the clinics. The police know these problems, and yet it is allowed to go on to create a major heroin corner linked to three assaults and one murder just in the last few months. We as a neighborhood in the whole west side of the city should feel abandoned, and we do.
We police differently our neighborhoods. I think we ought to police these troubled neighborhoods like we police the Orioles and the Ravens. You ever go to the stadium? You ever see dozens of police there?
People want that in those neighborhoods?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They want that in those neighborhoods. They want dozens of police.
That's interesting, because then I hear other people say, well, there's too much police presence.
There ain't
too
much police.
It's militaristic.
No, we don't want the National Guard, but we want the police.
Let's take another call. While Carl's here, Blair in Baltimore. Go right ahead, Blair. We're short of time.
I just wanted to say that a lot of people's jobs depend on the status quo remaining the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if crime were low, we wouldn't need as many criminal defenders and criminal prosecutors. Public education were good, people would be employed, and they would not need social workers or welfare. If people behaved, we wouldn't need as many police officers. If families were functional, we would not need charitable foundations donating money to after-school programs and family counseling. All of those industries would see their employees in the unemployment lines. So if they were actually successful at what they did, they would be out of jobs instead of constantly helping people who are out of jobs. This isn't working. What's been done for the last 50 years in terms of social welfare isn't working. Families are falling apart. This is job preservation.
Okay. I thought she was going to talk about the war on drugs when she makes that point, because some people often will say, yeah, the reason we have a war on drugs, the reason we have all this is because of the apparatus. It's so extensive, you know, from the size of our police departments to the courts.
It is expensive.
To the trial attorneys. And all of it, and the penal system. Instead, that was a comment about our social welfare conditions. Anyway, thank you very much for being here, Carl Stokes. Appreciate
you,
having
Dan.
You sit in for us. We didn't solve anything, did we? I think we made some good points, though, about what needs to be done over at City Hall with regard to a couple of these things that are going on. The Homicide Review Commission, I think that needs a look at.
Yeah, I actually thought we did bring some voice to some things, frankly.
We did. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
And thank you, Fraser Smith, senior news analyst here at WIPR. Please enjoy lunch from Rosina Gourmet. We'll have the second hour of our show. Dr. John Smarr will be here shortly for a new edition of Midday on Health.